Amen. The Christian faith is a missionary faith. It is a missionary faith. It is designed to be shared. We saw that on Easter Sunday. The angel told the women when they discovered the empty tomb, what did they say? Don't be afraid. Come and see. Go and tell. Don't be afraid. Come and see. Go and tell. And then Jesus appeared to those same women and he said, don't be afraid. Go and tell. Don't be afraid. Go and tell. Jesus is alive. He's conquered death. He rose from the dead, and that is good news. That's the gospel. That's the evangel. So there's nothing to fear, and that message has to be evangelized or spread. However, according to a 2012 poll by Lifeway Research, let's see if I get this right. There we go. 80% of church-going Protestants believe they have the responsibility to share their faith. And since we fall in that category, raise your hands. Let's see if that 80% from the researchers is represented in our church. Do you believe you have a responsibility to share your faith? Wow, maybe more than 80%. Okay. All right, and I'm not going to ask you to raise your hands on this one, but the next question they asked was that how many of you have shared the gospel with someone in the last 6 months? What do you think? Well, some of you saw it already, right? 39%. Don't raise your hands on this one. But my cell number is 575-4022. I want you to text me right now, honestly. Pull your phone out. Yes. Okay. You can turn it off airplane mode. Oh, yeah, right. Okay. You can call me right now. I'm interested in getting a text from all of you, 575-4022. 575-4022. Text me if you have shared the gospel with someone in the last 6 months. Oh, there it goes. The last 6 months. Actually, that one came from Boston. How odd. That was pretty funny. They didn't even hear the message. Share the gospel with someone in the last 6 months. You helped them understand how to receive. Come on, don't be shy. Okay, this is good. This is good. The phone is going. One, two. Well, there's another one. One, two, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, several times, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 2, 18. 19, 20. Okay, this is, do you think that's half of us? 39%? This is awesome that you have done this, and it's still going. It's going to be going all, okay, you can go back to airplane mode now. See, frequently when that question is asked, How have you done? What we have is shame. I'm not asking you this question to shame you. I'm not going down that superhighway right now. Because if you have the responsibility to share the gospel, we've got to do it. But not because it is it's a command. It's because it's a gift. It's a gift. See, some of us who aren't part of the 39%, you didn't text me, you look at Jonah as a relief. Because Jonah is a designated what? Prophet of God. And if he's not sharing, if he's running the other direction, what would you expect from me? I'm an accountant. I'm a dentist. I'm a lawyer. I'm a teacher. See, this designated prophet of God had a clear directive to go to Nineveh. He goes the exact opposite direction. And if anyone should be on board, you'd think it would be a prophet. But he doesn't. Jonah is not your model. Jonah isn't your model. I'm afraid he's my mirror, but he's not your model. See, Jonah runs. He not only runs away from God, he sails. And he not only sails away from God, he even tries to swim away from God. Well, not exactly swim. Maybe we should say he tries to drown away from God. He wants to get as far away from doing what God asks him to do. Especially because God's message of his judgment and mercy was going to go to the enemies of Israel. See, I want you to rejoice that we have the privilege of sharing the gospel. I don't want you to feel guilty or ashamed if you haven't shared the gospel in the last 6 months. I hope the next six are going to be different. You know, I'm not even interested in trying to persuade you to share the love of Christ with your neighbor today. I'm really not interested in that. What I really want is I want us to look at God. I want us to look at our God. And how committed is God to rescuing a lost and rebellious humanity? How far does he go to show his mercy? Well, we've sung about it. We just celebrated it on Easter. What does he do? At infinite cost to himself, what has God done? God has given his only son. So there's nothing he's not willing to do to reach out. But even more than that, he goes after the hearts of his children. One of the things that we're learning about on Thursday evenings about marriage is God's not just interested in our behavior. He wants our hearts. See, if I haven't shared the gospel with someone in the last 6 months, that says a lot about my heart and how I view my God. See, God will do the impossible to extend his mercy. He will do the impossible. See, God shows his mercy. Shows it to the pagan sailors, right? They say, we're going to throw him in, please don't kill us. I mean, we're only doing it because, I mean, it's his fault we're in this storm. So we're just going to throw him in, okay? And what does God do? From last week, you remember, right? What does he do? He calms the storm. God has mercy on unbelievers? Do you believe that? We have an amazing God. Not only does he have mercy on unbelievers, he has mercy. He shows mercy to his disobedient prophet, Jonah. We read that he has provided or appointed a huge fish to swallow him. And I'm really honest with you, we're not going to talk about just which kind of fish it was or the size of the whale's throat or whether it would have the size of a stomach that a man could fit in. We're not going to talk about that, okay? That's irrelevant. And it's not because I don't want you to think or that I want you to think this is a fairy tale, because Jesus treated this event of Jonah being swallowed by a fish and being in the fish for 3 days, Jesus treated it as a historical event. as an illustration of his being in the tomb for 3 days and then rising again. But the size of the fish, the size of the throat, where was Jonah? How was he laying in the fish? We're not talking about Aquaman here, okay? We're not talking about someone who can communicate with sea creatures and get them to do what he wants. We're talking about God. God, the creator of planet Earth, the creator of the universe, God provides a fish to swallow Jonah and to keep him alive for 3 days. Now, he could have created a brand new sea creature for this. He could have enabled Jonah to get oxygen from water. He could have created an oxygen bubble with a semi-permeable membrane that could take the stomach acid from the fish and transform it into oxygen and nourish Jonah. We don't know. Frankly, I don't care. It's God we're talking about. We're talking about a God who can create out of nothing. He can even take what he's made and cause things to go a little bit differently. I mean, Jesus did walk on water. God is God. And how he did it, I do not know. But the point is not how, but it's who. The point is not how, it's who. We're dealing with the living God. See, God provided a fish to swallow Jonah, but that's not the greatest miracle of the passage. Him staying alive 3 days and three nights in the belly of a big fish, that is not the biggest miracle. The greatest miracle shouting off the pages of Scripture this morning is that instead of allowing Jonah to die in judgment and condemnation for his outright defiance and disobedience, God displays mercy. Is that the God you've come to worship this morning? See, instead of giving Jonah what he surely deserves, he endangered a bunch of innocent people. Instead of giving Jonah what he expected, and even the sailors expected, instead of condemning, God rescues. That is a miracle. See, how committed is God to evangelism? How committed is God to extending his mercy and grace to a lost world? So much so that he extends that mercy to his rebellious child. He goes after his heart. He does the impossible to extend his mercy. Do you have a little hope this morning now? Like I said, Jonah is not your example, but he may be your mirror. You may see yourself in Jonah with the same expectations that God is going to get you, because you haven't just disobeyed once. You've got a whole list of times. And you're just waiting for the shoe to drop. But that's not our God. Our God mercifully listens to our prayers. From the inside of the fish, Jonah prayed to the Lord his God. He said, "In my distress, I called to the Lord. He answered me. From deep in the realm of the dead, I called for help, and you listened to my cry. You hurled me into the depths, into the very heart of the seas, and the currents swirled about me. All your waves and breakers swept over me. I said, 'I have been banished from your sight, yet I will look again toward your holy temple.' The engulfing waters threatened me. The deep surrounded me. Seaweed wrapped around my head. To the roots of the mountains I sank down. The earth beneath me barred me in forever. But you, Lord my God, brought my life up from the pit. When my life was ebbing away, I remembered you, Lord, and my prayer rose to you, to your holy temple. Those who cling to worthless idols turn away from God's love for them, but I, with shouts of grateful praise, will sacrifice to you. What I have vowed, I will make good. I will say, 'Salvation comes from the Lord. See, Jonah's preserved by the mercy of God in the belly of a fish for 3 days. Now, I just want you to imagine for one moment what he may have gone through. Because again, Jesus says that this happened and it was 3 days. Now, I got tossed around in some waves in Hawaii, thought I was going to die. Maybe that was about a minute, maybe 90 seconds. And I can tell you, did my life pass before me? I don't know, but I did come out of the water with memories that I didn't have before. So something took place, but that was almost nothing. Jonah is swallowed by a fish, and we don't know if the belly is filled with water. He's trying to, you know, like they show on TV, the car goes into the water, and the person's trying to get their head. We don't know if it's like that, or if God had some other way of preserving him. But you can gather from this psalm of thanksgiving that it wasn't comfortable. Right? Do you get the idea that he's just relaxing and floating like on a little floaty in the pool? He's not doing that. But it's a psalm of gratitude. Jonah is praising God for saving him, for rescuing him from drowning. It is beautiful. And you can find references in these eight verses to many psalms. God mercifully, mercifully listens to our prayers. Even with our baggage. Even with our baggage. Is it really a psalm of thanksgiving? Let me read it one more time. In my distress, I called to the Lord. He answered me. From deep in the realm of the dead, I called for help. You listened to my cry. You hurled me into the depths, into the very heart of the seas, and the currents swirled about me. All your waves and breakers swept over me. I said, I have been banished from your sight, yet I will look again toward your holy temple. The engulfing waters threatened me. The deep surrounded me. The seaweed was wrapped around my head. To the roots of the mountains, I sank down. The earth beneath barred me in forever. But you, Lord my God, brought my life up from the pit. When my life was ebbing away, I remembered you, Lord, and my prayer rose to you, to your holy temple. Those who cling to worthless idols turn away from God's love for them. But I, with shouts of grateful praise, will sacrifice to you. What I have vowed, I will make good. I will say, salvation comes from the Lord. I'm not quite sure that this is a psalm of thanksgiving. It looks just like it. It follows the pattern of a psalm of thanksgiving. But just in case you weren't counting, there are 27 first-person references. I, me, my. 27 in 8 verses. Guess how many there are references to God? 15. Not judging, just saying. Sounds a lot like my prayers. This is focused on himself. Do you have that same kind of baggage when you come to the Lord in prayer? That, I mean, he gets in there, but it can be an awful lot about us. And see, not only is it about us, but did you catch how many that he blamed God? Just backtrack a second. Why did Jonah end up in the sea? First of all, who threw him? The sailors did. At whose request? Jonah's. Jonah says, throw me in. But you know, it's funny because when I read verse 3, maybe there's something lost in the translation. He says, you hurled me into the depths. All your waves and breakers swept over. I have said, I have been banished from your sight. We never do that, do we? We never do that. We never see the consequences of our sin and try to reverse them back on God and say, gosh, Lord, you're so harsh. I may have messed up a little bit, but really? This is what's going to happen to me now? I mean, lucky Jonah prayed, because it seems like God really may have fallen asleep. Oh no, Jonah was the one who was asleep. Did you catch the references of self-pity? I mean, can you see the detail there in verses 5 and 6? It was only seconds that he was sinking. Right? Verse 17 of chapter 1, he had been thrown in and the Lord provided a huge fish to swallow Jonah. I think he probably would have drowned if he wasn't already in the fish pretty quickly. The engulfing waters threatened me. The deep surrounded me. Seaweed was wrapped around my head. To the roots of the mountains I sank down. The earth beneath barred me forever. But you, Lord my God, brought me up from the pit. Have you ever realized how specific and detailed we can get when we are thinking about our hurt and our struggles and the consequences of our disobedience? See, it ends up, we focus, we're praying, but our whole focus is inward on us. But that's not enough. Also in Jonah's baggage, like our baggage, we get a judgmental spirit. Did you catch that in verse 8? He's sinking down into the pit, but his prayer rises to God, and he says, those who cling to worthless idols turn away from God's love for him. Okay, if he's referring to the sailors, it's actually the exact opposite. The sailors turn to the living God. Even though they're pagans, even though they're idolatrous, they actually turn to the living God and say, we're tossing them in. Please have mercy on us. We got nothing. We can't claim anything. They turn to him, and the one who actually knows this living God is doing what? He's running away, sailing away, swimming away. He's trying to avoid God. But those pagans, they forfeit God's mercy to them. They turn away from God's love for them. Have you ever found yourself in prayer judging other people? See, what's the greatest miracle in this passage? It's not that Jonah gets vomited up onto the shore. It's that Jonah is alive to be vomited up on the shore instead of facing his maker. See, God mercifully listens to our prayers. Even when we're turning away from him, even with our baggage, because he will stop at nothing. He will stop at nothing to extend his mercy. See, God listens mercifully to Jonah's prayer. He's going after his child's heart, and we're going to see in the next couple of weeks just how great God's heart is for those who are lost. So we're seeing today, and we will see how great God's heart is toward his children who are lost in their own pain. So if right now you find yourself either inching away from God or having turned away from God, know that he has not turned away from you. He is pursuing you. It may not be as spectacular as a big fish, but his heart is for you. And he is coming for you. We have an incredible God. The fish obeys. The Lord commanded the fish, or the Lord said to the fish, spoke to the fish, and it vomited Jonah out onto dry land. See, Jonah may be your mirror. You may not be obedient right now. You may be resisting, and I urge you, please, don't do the Jonah prayer. Don't do that. Don't try to defend yourself. Don't focus just on your life. Don't judge other people. God is merciful. Cry out to him. Say, Lord, rescue me. What I love about Jonah is that God rescued him before he prayed. And he may be doing the same thing for you right now. We will go and tell. We will go and tell when we catch a glimpse of God's heart. He stops at nothing to extend his mercy. Amen.